Accountability will be called to order. I think we have a little housekeeping before we start here today. We have new members to welcome to the committee. And also, I think we also have a birthday today. Want to wish that a happy 55th birthday, is that what Dan told me? 55 years young today.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
All right, Dan is the one giving other ages, contradicting me. But I think as a co-chair, Representative Tracy would join me in wishing happy 55th birthday.
Thank you very much. I'll take it.
We do have some new members of the commission on here, including co-chair Representative Tracy. Representative Neckritz and Riley have been on. Representative Burke, welcome. Representative Poe, welcome back. And Senator Kaler, welcome to the committee. Is it not on? I flipped a switch that says on.
There's one on the mic, too, I think.
Oh. Multiple.
It is. Welcome.
That's how co-chairs work together here. Is that working? No? Hello.
We can hear you
fine.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm gonna project here. And if you can't hear me, I don't have much more to say. I'm going to turn over to co-chair Tracy here. For any other comments, we are working on the fly here.
Well, thank you. I look forward to working with everyone.
Is this one working?
Yeah.
Is this working?
No, none of it.
I look forward to working with all of you. I've always had a great deal of respect and value the information that COGFA has given to the legislative bodies and everyone in the Capitol. So I look forward to working from you and I appreciate any help along the way as I learn a lot about the process. Thank you.
Also want to welcome my colleague Senator Rose to COGFA. If during the middle of your presentations he gets up and leaves, I know it has nothing to do with the content of what you're saying. He and some other members of the commission have a joint appropriations committee hearing at 10 o'clock, so we understand if you have to get up. Now, if he does get up and leave in the next 2 minutes or so in the middle, then he might have a problem.
First meeting.
So with that, a call to order. Do we have a clerk to call a roll?
Yes. Okay. Representative Burke.
Present.
Senator Frerich.
Present.
Senator Taylor.
Present.
Senator Murphy. Representative Neckritz.
Yes.
Representative Poe.
Representative Riley. Here. Senator Rose. Yes, thank you. Senator Stevenson. Nothing's ever changed.
Representative
Tracy.
Senator
Trotter.
Representative Tryon.
Okay. Late attendance, quorum being present. We'll start today with our 2014 economic forecast and revenue estimate, something we do annually here. And the birthday boy gets to present today. Wow, what a present to yourself.
Yeah. I'm glad to be in Springfield to celebrate it. We're going to use a handout if you want to open up to page 4, which is the first chart. It basically...
Go ahead.
Okay.
Cuts in and out.
I'll try to talk loud, too.
Is it working? Is it working?
Yeah.
It's on.
Okay.
It's a little closer. It's a result of the question.
The first chart is just basically on a fiscal year basis what's happened quarter to quarter. This has been a very unusual expansion. It started in the middle of 2009. It's still going, but very sluggishly. In fact, working. So in terms, it's been the slowest economic recovery we've had, at least in the post-World War II period. Some economists even go back to the Great Recession, where you had ups and downs, and say it's the slowest ever. In the last quarter, which you can barely see, which is the last quarter of last year, it was basically no growth at all. The original preliminary report showed it down 0.1%. The next report showed it up 0.1. We'll get one more revision of this, so who knows, but basically it was just flat. The reason it was flat was primarily the federal government and a big cutback in defense spending during that quarter. However, you cannot discount the consumer, which accounts for 70% of all spending in the economy. And if you look at the next chart on retail sales, it's a reflection of what's been a very sluggish consumer. In fact, holiday sales came in at 3%. That was down a full percent from what the National Retail Federation had forecast at 4%, which was considered at the time of the original forecast to be too conservative. At 3%, it's about half of what we saw in each of the prior 2 years, which were also periods of economic recovery. So it's been, we've been running below trend ever since this recovery began. So it's still growing, but very, very slowly. It hasn't, if you look at the next chart, it hasn't been due to autos, which is a large component, because autos have done quite well compared to where they had been, I should say. If you go from 09 when the recovery began and drew a line up, you can see that it's been on an upward course. There was some controversy at the time when we had the cash for clunkers. Cost the government some money to put on that program, but if you look at the chart, it was very temporary. They fell off immediately after, so all it did was cut into future sales, and then we got back onto the trend line. So autos have done better than overall retail sales. What happens to the consumer on the next chart also depends on how they feel about what's going on in the economy, in addition to income, of course. And you can see that since 2009, consumer attitudes have improved. We've had a couple downs here. As you know, the economy hit a soft spot in each of the last three summers. But it did later then come back and go upward. Right now, we're at about the same level we were in March, and kind of a flat but slightly upward trend. Again, though, if you look historically going back before this recession started, we're still at relatively modest levels compared to where we had been. And it isn't because we aren't seeing some bright spots in the economy that should boost consumer confidence. The next chart, for example, just shows what's happened to the stock market. It's the Dow Jones. As you know, the last couple of days we've set a record. So we've surpassed the previous high in the Dow Jones. The S&P, we're about 5 points below where we will hit a record high there, too. So that's been encouraging. Remember, we used to say that the 401Ks were now 201Ks, where they're back to 401Ks again. So that's a positive looking forward to the consumer. Another positive on the next chart shows that new home prices have stopped declining, and both median and average prices have shown some upward improvement. I might add, this is a national chart. Unfortunately, in Illinois, the individual forecast we had done by Moody shows that we're not participating yet in this improvement in home prices. I know I'm treasurer of our condo building, and I sign right of first refusal all the time, and believe me, nothing's changed in the last 2 years where prices are. But overall, nationally, it's doing better. Another plus has been really in the fact that our imports have fallen, mainly in the energy area, as we are producing more and more energy, particularly on private lands with new ways of drilling, et cetera. So that has a very positive impact on overall growth. On the other hand, when you look at exports, and Illinois is fifth largest in exports, you can see while it's vastly improved from where we were, that there's been some softness in recent months. And partly this reflects what's happening in Europe. 20% of Illinois' exports come from Europe. They're mainly in recession. China's slowing down, which is, I think, our third largest exporter, Canada being first, Mexico being second. We're still vastly improved from where we were and higher than where when the recession began, but there's been some moderation in the last couple of months. Now, if we turn from the consumer to the business sector on the next chart, we have seen the Purchasing Managers Index, both for Chicago and the nation, on the upbeat. Again, we had two summers where the economy hit a soft patch, but the last few months we're rising again. Can you hear me? Or?
Yeah, I just had a question.
Yeah.
On your export chart?
Yeah.
Is there any significance to the slope of the curve? Because if you look at the 2008-09 Great Recession,
right,
drip, drop, it's combined dip and drop into drip. But if you look at that drop, that roughly approximates the drop that we're looking at in the last couple months here, as opposed to other just sort of ups and downs.
Yeah, I wouldn't read too much into that. I think this is very volatile. They used to have two reports on this. They've improved it a little. Now it used to be from where it was, it wasn't where it was exported from, but where the ships took from. So New Orleans and stuff would have a, now they try to do it by the origin of where it comes from. So it's a little harder data now, but it's very volatile, and it's not really a very definitive measure.
Representative Riley, a
question. You know, along those same lines, and I'm really glad that Senator Rose started the question. How many years were in your time series when you did your trend line analysis? All of the years on the chart, or did you go back further? No,
we just sort of, it's not statistically an accurate trend line.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask, because I was going to ask you questions about the inflection points, you know,
right,
where the dips and, okay, thank you.
We try to seasonally adjust a lot of this, but that's, well, anyway, business spending starting to come back up. Corporations are flush with funds, et cetera. And I think you're probably going to see a continued improvement. Anything above 50% on this line represents growth. Anything below is a contraction. The next chart shows the service sector of the economy, which, of course, now is larger than the manufacturing sector. And again, you see the little dips here that we've had during the last few years during soft spots, but we seem to be on an upward trend again in the service sector as well. Unfortunately, while business is doing better, and we have seen some growth in employment, it's really not been what's customarily found in an economic recovery. The chart for United States employment shows we have been growing from some time, but yet we're still below the levels we saw before the recession hit. Now, in the 2001 recession we had, by 2005, we had already recouped everything that was lost during that recession and had it higher. This has not been the case thus far. Job growth, the market really took off when they had the benchmark revisions, and it showed that instead of about 150,000 a month, it really was 180. So the market took off saying things are better than we thought. But then you start looking at this year again, even with the new benchmarks, we're back in that 150, 160 range. Now, in the last report, there was 236 increase, which I think is not necessarily the beginning of a new trend, because you had 130,000 people drop out of the labor force. So that would add a tenth to the unemployment rate alone. So you're still sticking, you know, around close to 8% unemployment rate. The situation is weaker in Illinois. As you can see, we've also shown some job growth. But unlike the nation, we never recouped the jobs lost to the previous recession before this one hit. So the gap is growing. In fact, I'll get a little into it a little more later. we have once a year always have Moody's Analytics take a look just at Illinois. Now, you've seen the figures in the budget, which uses Moody's Analytics and uses Global Insight, which are the same ones we use, and they do it for the nation, because Illinois and the nation are, when you look at the makeup, are very similar to the nation. Since 2009, the gap is growing, and we are much weaker, not only than the nation, but I asked the author to look at our surrounding states, and we're falling behind there as well. So it's not quite what we had seen in recent periods of economic cycles. And it shows up in the next chart, the unemployment rate. We just got the previous month, because of the benchmark for Illinois, we were up to 9% unemployment rate. The nation, which is 1 month ahead of us now, was at 7.7. We've been running pretty much a full percent above the national average. Normally, as you can see from the chart, we are a little above the nation's, but the gap seems to have grown over the last couple of years. The next chart shows another positive, I suppose, for the consumer, and that is we've had very low inflation rates. Actually, we're about 1.6% rate of increase in consumer prices overall, 1.9 if you take out food and energy, which is, you know, historically quite low rates of inflation. The Fed's probably accounted for some of this with the extremely low, historically low interest rates that they've been providing, buying $85 billion a month in Treasury securities. So the Treasury has now surpassed China in who's buying our debt. They're buying it from themselves. But when you add the unemployment rate and the consumer price index together, which used to be called the misery index on the next chart, you can see much progress has been made. However, it isn't because the unemployment rate's falling very low. It's because inflation has come down so much. This may bump up a little in the next month, just because the higher gasoline prices will come in next month's CPI. But we have seen improvement in this index, but I'm a little wary because of the very low inflation rate as to whether it truly reflects the misery in the economy. The next chart basically just shows three different forecasts done by Global Insight for the economy overall, and that basically is the baseline, which has a 60% chance of occurring, which basically shows we're going to continue to slug along at about a 2% rate, which we have for the last few years. And, of course, there's a pessimistic, which actually puts a couple quarters of decline in the period immediately ahead, which would come close to being a recession. And then a more optimistic, which shows somewhat faster growth over the next fiscal year. Both of those have about a 20% chance of occurring. So basically it's that we're just going to slug along. The actual numbers are on the next chart for the baseline. It shows we had 2.2% on a fiscal year basis in 2011, 2% in 2012, 1.9% to 2013, a little improvement next year to 2.4. But it takes consistent growth of 2.5% to 3% to make any significant dent in the unemployment rate. The next chart, for example, is on a calendar year basis, and it shows our unemployment rate continuing to be higher than the nation. These are year averages from the previous year's average. Again, I think Lene passed out the book that Moody's did specifically for the commission, which looks just at Illinois. And let me read a few statements. The state is just one of a handful nationally in danger of falling back into a recession. A weak housing market and poor state finances are largely to blame. After a promising start to the recovery, Illinois has been among the Midwest's weakest and is underperforming the nation in most gauges. It does say that longer term, Illinois has a lot of what businesses need to thrive, talent, access to consumers and capital, transportation, but painful fiscal reforms are needed before it can fully capitalize on these strengths. This is, we just let them go ahead, and it's an outside opinion. In the days when I first started in economics, we used to have Wharton's, we used to have data resources, now they're all one, basically. You have Global Insight, and you have Moody's Analytics. So it is good to go and have an individual economist. We also have another service we buy, trying to get to see if there's differences in here rather than having this standard line. Finally, the last chart in my section here shows state tax receipts. I used to participate. Jim participates now. They look at 16 states that are geographically diverse as a representation of how states are doing. And you can see that we're well off the lows we saw just as the recovery began in 2009. I think the last month was down just a tad since this was presented. So we're sort of flattening out here. Substantial improvement from where we had been. But nevertheless, we're still below where we were prior to the previous recession. And this is worked into Jim's forecast for revenues for the year ahead.
I don't know how well this mic works. I'll just try to speak up. Page 22 shows on a month-by-month basis how we fared revenue-wise in fiscal year 13 year-to-date. We'll go through this year before we get to the forecast for 14. But you can see there's quite a bit of variability between each month, but overall, through February, we're up $1.308 billion. A large part of that has to do with federal sources, so if you strip that away, we're still up $701 million, which means we've done pretty well thus far in fiscal year 13. A more detailed look can be shown on page 23 in that table. It goes by source how revenues have performed. Personal income tax has done quite well, as has corporate. Sales tax had a good February, but the months prior to that, they were pretty weak. Now, personal, we expect to slow considerably as the timing elements of last year's final payments comes due. And by that, I mean in fiscal year 11, the higher tax rates went into effect. But by the time later in January and February, when the withholding tables were all adjusted, we had basically lost around a month or 6 weeks of withholding. That showed up then in final payments when people did their taxes for tax year 11, and it showed up in the spring of fiscal year 12. That was a one-time makeup. It was really fiscal year 11 revenues that moved into 12. It was one time. It will not repeat in 13. So we should see some slippage in the year-to-date growth rates, particularly for personal. Also, the numerous tax changes that were made, both the state as well as federal, and how they relate to the corporate income tax, could have adjusted the way corporations have submitted their estimated payments thus far this fiscal year. So the 25% or nearly 25% growth rate we have here, we're not quite that optimistic. We think there may be, again, some slippage as we finish out this fiscal year. But obviously, both of those sources have done quite well. Really, none of the other revenue sources have done much other than meet our expectations. Federal sources, I would say, has been up considerably year-to-date. We're up 33%. That's a function of reimbursable spending, but also as we compare with a much weaker first two-thirds of the year for fiscal year 12. But again, overall, I would say that revenues have done quite well through February. How that then transitions to the forecast can be shown on page 24, where the Commission's estimate for fiscal year 13 is at $34.281 billion. We are $379 million below that of the governor's estimate just released last week. However, if you look line by line, yeah, there's some variances between the larger economic sources, but by and large, things tend to net themselves out, and you can see in terms of growth, the state sources are only differing by $10 million over a almost $31 billion base. So the estimates are very close. Where we differ somewhat is in the estimate of federal sources. We're at $3.8 billion for this fiscal year. If we annualize the first two-thirds of the fiscal year, you get about $308 million a month. That translates to about $3.7 billion for the year. We think we'll be able to pick up a little bit. Our estimate is 3.8, but to hit the governor's number of 4.151 billion, our monthly average would have to leap from 308 million to 423 million, and we're just not that optimistic that we'd be able to hit that number. So really, the federal source line is what comprises the difference for the estimates for fiscal year 13. The underlying economic sources are all very close. As we go ahead to fiscal year 14, then, on page 25, you'll see our forecast is for $35.081 billion. That represents an increase of $800 million, or about 2.3% over the 13 estimate. Unfortunately, most views are that fiscal year 14 will be continue to be saddled with struggling employment gains and overall unspectacular economic performance. In terms of the larger economic sources of personal, corporate, and sales, I'll just run through them real quick. Personal income tax, we're estimating an underlying base growth of about 2.3%. Just to give you some context, if you look over the last 15 years, you'd be looking at about 3.4%. So we think we're going to be under trend. Corporate income tax, historically over the last 15 years, you're looking at about 4.5%. We actually think, along with the forecasting services, that corporate profits will essentially be flat. In fact, I think GOMB is assuming 1.1% decline. We're assuming flat. We are able to get some gains in corporate income tax, but they are related to the federal bonus depreciation of a couple of years ago and unrelated to underlying growth. Sales tax, we're anticipating only a 1.1% increase, kind of a carry forward of the very tepid sales tax that we've seen thus far this fiscal year, and kind of underscoring the fact that the consumer really hasn't engaged yet into this recovery period. Very little growth can be expected from the other non-economic sources. You see a decrease there in inheritance tax. That's simply a function of the exemption amount going up. And then finally, the federal source estimate, we have included an increase there of $200 million, approximately 5%. Ultimately, that figure will be dependent on what the appropriations are set to be, as well as what the actual reimbursable spending that the comptroller is able to do in fiscal year 14. But we think that everybody seems on board with trying to get those overdue bills paid down, so we think it's realistic to build in there some growth. So again, $800 million in growth for fiscal year 14. How then do we differ from the governor's estimate just released last week? On page 26, you'll see that while we're just over $35 billion, the governor's estimate is at $35.630 billion, a difference of $549 million. Now, you really have to kind of drill down a little bit to see where the differences lie. The differences on the economic side, statistically, there are none. We all see the same things. Where the differences lie are in several different policy areas, and I'll just go over quickly what those are, and essentially they comprise the differences. The first is GOMB proposes essentially moving $186 million from the state gaming fund, which is being held there rather than going to the horse racing equity fund. They propose moving that money to GRF. Those of you who haven't heard about this, essentially 15% of the AGR, the adjusted gross receipts of the 10th license in Des Plaines, was to go to the horse racing equity fund. And then to the horse racing industry. The comptroller is of the opinion, as are some others, that there doesn't exist the necessary statutory language that would enable the money to be moved from the state gaming fund to the horse racing equity fund, and no appropriation exists to actually get that money spent. So this $186 million is essentially sitting there, not earning interest in the state gaming fund. So they propose to move that into general revenue. It would take legislative action to do that. Secondly, they propose transferring $155 million from the income tax refund fund into the general funds. Department of Revenue has testified over the last month or so that we have not only erased the backlog in owed refunds, but they also believe that a balance will be accrued by the end of this fiscal year, and they feel comfortable that $155 million of that balance could then be utilized and transferred into GRF. Again, there would probably have to be legislation that would enable that to occur. And then thirdly, and related to the refund percentage, they are also assuming a slightly lower refund percentage for 14, from the current 9.75 to 9% for personal, and from the current 14% for corporate down to 12%. The value of that decline would be approximately $200 million. There is a statutory formula that essentially protects the state from running a deficit year to year to year on the refund funds. However, more times than not over the last probably 10 years, that number has been plugged in statute in the budget implementation language. So the department feels that, you know, we've been able to eliminate the backlog with the current percentages. They don't feel that that percentage should remain, that it should instead be lowered. So the value of that is about $200 million. When we provide our forecast here, we just use current law. The calculation is theirs. They're the ones who certify it to the comptroller at the end of the fiscal year. We have gone through, we have taken a look at some of their calculations related how they came up with the lower numbers. I would say that in terms of comfort level, we'd probably feel more comfortable with the lower corporate income tax percentage. The personal income tax percentage, the comfort level probably isn't quite to the level that they would recommend here. But regardless of that, we have been able to eliminate the backlog, which not long ago was at $500 to $600 million. And then finally, federal sources. Again, we're just slightly less optimistic on federal sources for 14. The governor's number, the 4.178, assumes that they're going to spend all the appropriation and they're going to get all the reimbursement within this time period. That's just not how it usually works. It's hard to get all that spending done within that 12-month time period. So, again, the $549 million difference between COGFA and the Bureau. Really, when you boil out these various policy proposals here, the differences really don't exist. The economic sources are very, very close. Real quick, I'll just present what the governor had laid out in the budget book in terms of his general fund's budget plan. On page 27, you can see a fiscal year 2014 utilizing the governor's revenue forecast of 35.6. And his spending forecast of 35.6, you would essentially have a flat operating deficit, actually a $9 million surplus for fiscal year 14. But then you have to bring in the $4.5 billion from the deficit at the end of projected to be at for 13, and you would still have about a 4.5% projected deficit at the end of the year. And I would add that doesn't include some of those other items that are out there in the pipeline. The Medicaid backlog, the group insurance backlog. We used to have the corporate refund backlog in here, but now that's been eliminated. But so that 4.5 is probably somewhat different than the $9 billion you normally hear about. It's just a slightly different measure. And then page 28, if you remember when the tax increase was put into effect, The question was, well, how much can we expect? And most estimates at that time were somewhere between $7 and $8 billion. We went back after the fact. Between that two-year phase-in period between FY10 and FY12, income tax grew about $8 billion. We kind of went back in there and dug into the numbers, and we think that the actual tax increase generated about what was expected, about $7.5 billion. Base growth also contributed about $1 billion, and there was some changes in the, from the federal depreciation that actually took revenues away of a little over $0.5 billion. So overall, I would say that the tax increase generated pretty much the revenue that everyone thought it would. Speaking of the tax increase, the table on page 29 shows what will happen in just another short fiscal year. The column on the right essentially tries to quantify the value of that tax increase, and we would go from approximately 7.6 in fiscal 14 down to $5.4 billion in 15, a drop of about $2.2 billion. And then in 16, it continues to phase out, dropping to $2.8, $2.9 billion. So you're looking at a two-year difference between 14 and 16 of a loss of about $4.7 billion in revenue under current law. The rest of the charts and tables are essentially just historical in context. So if you have any questions on the forecast, Ed and I would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, there are some questions for the committee. Representative Riley.
Thank you for the analysis. You know, statistically, a $500 million difference between COGFA and OMB isn't that big of a deal, but for those of us who have to slug it out, it looms large. If these differences were based on, you know, different methods of estimating the usual and typical sources of revenue, that would be one thing. But a lot of it's based on, it's almost like, you know, going to Vegas and betting on the come. That sort of. thank you, Representative Poe. The move of that $186 million to GRF, which needs our approval, and some of these other kinds of things. So taking that into consideration, what's your view? I mean, I'm sure you want to stick by your number. But since the differences are based on things like this, you know, things that we can act on, what's your view about any negotiations that we may do to try to move the number up? Would you say that that would be sound, or, you know, would you, what's your view?
Really, the only thing where our input probably could be utilized would be that on the refund percentage. And The $200 million. We've had a chance to take a look at the analysis that Department of Revenue did. Again, between the two percentages, the corporate and the personal income tax, I think the corporate one, you could make a very strong argument that it could safely be lower than the 14%.
Okay.
The personal income tax, you could make a good argument that it should be lowered from the current 9.75%, but to take it to 9%, you start to lose some of the comfort level.
Okay.
I think that maybe somewhere in between those two would be a more comfortable amount. You can't lose sight that the current refund percentages have been enough to eliminate the backlog. But moving forward, there are always some ups and downs with how people claim their refunds. Did the tax rate ultimately impact on what people are claiming for refunds? If that tax rate goes away, will that ultimately impact the other direction? Only until some better data in March and April that comes in will the department have a clear indication as to what people are actually claiming for refunds. Hmm. So we're probably still a little bit early
to actually, you know, fully vet that number. But just looking at the preliminary analysis, yes, it probably could be moved down from the current refund percentage, but maybe some caution going all the way to the proposed 9% would be in order.
Okay. So if there's any float, if you will, it would be in this particular component and something much less than the $200 million.
Right, right. And those other two items, you know, that money is sitting there, so it isn't like it's, well, particularly for the horse racing equity. I mean, that money is sitting there, so
right.
The decision is simply to take it or not.
Okay.
So the refund percentage obviously could be structured so that, you know, if that money is there, and all indications are that it will be, but if that money is there, it could be captured. You could structure it so that, obviously, if that money isn't there, you couldn't tap it.
Mm-hmm.
But of the three there, I would say the refund percentage is the one that we would weigh in and try to guide a little bit.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Very informative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jim, can you just walk me through the federal funds component? You indicated earlier, I think you thought that the gain in federal funds was good. What's the cause of that?
Well, primarily, in terms of the year-over-year change, it's two things. One, you're always comparing against the same period of a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, it's your federal spending. We had some very aggressive spending done by the comptroller over the last few months, not so much in February, but the months leading up to February. Federal sources are very difficult for us to gauge. It's not a true revenue source in the sense that we do taxes. It's ultimately based on appropriation levels, available resources, and then the spending that the comptroller undertakes. And those three things kind of govern how federal sources come in. Also in the equation now, it seems like every year, of the Medicaid spending, and when I talk about federal sources, 90% of that number is related to Medicaid spending. But we have a number of other funds that we now utilize for Medicaid spending, the assessment funds, the newly created fiscal year 13 provider relief fund that was worth $264 million. So we have a number of different timing elements that enter into the fiscal year when it relates to Medicaid spending. And we just think that now with two-thirds of the fiscal year under our belt and with a likely shift to more of the non-general fund spending over the final third of the fiscal year, it will be very difficult to meet the spending levels necessary to hit the number for this fiscal year. And that's where you saw the 13.
To hit the governor's number?
To get
or?
The governor's
okay.
number. Yeah, they're at 4 points.
Right.
They're like $300 million higher than us.
So even though we've been aggressive over the last several months, you think based on the basis of all three quarters, we can continue that pace through the last quarter,
yes.
third of the year?
Yes. Our number essentially annualizes, plus builds in a little bit, about $100 million more we think could happen in order to get for fiscal year 13. That's still $350 million below what the governor's office is.
Okay.
Now, I've heard them say, yeah, but if we don't get it in this fiscal year, we'll simply get it in lapse period next year. True. But again, the other governing element enters into the equation, and that is the available resources at the comptroller's office. You can have all the appropriation in the world in lapse period, but if you don't have the cash to spend it, it doesn't really matter. So taking those things kind of together, we think that our more conservative view on federal sources seems appropriate at this time.
Okay. So then going on to the FY14 estimates, didn't we pass some legislation that when the governor presented his budget, he had to do so on the basis of current statutes?
Yes.
Okay. So his fiscal 14 budget, though, relies on some legislative action.
It would seem that two of those three, I think I'd cut them slack on the refund percentage because the department is the one who certifies that,
decisions.
And they could very well come in with that same number by statute. But the other two, the moving of the money, obviously, is something that would need legislation.
Okay. Thank you.
Are there further questions? Senator Taylor.
Don't we have lapse spending each year? And doesn't that form a pattern?
We do, but it varies from year to year depending. We've had 6-month lapse period spending over the last couple of years. We used to have 2 months. Prior to that, we used to have 3 months. So, again, it's very volatile, the lapse period spending. So it's difficult for us to gauge because we're not in the spending side of the equation.
But we've had some for FY13 we're in right now.
We had quite a bit of lapse period spending this fiscal year. Prior to
right.
that, the year ago, we had very little, hence the large year-over-year increase in part is due to the lapse period spending.
And so what, if I understand right, then what you're saying is that for the remainder of this fiscal year, then you don't think we're going to be able to keep up the level of spending as what is that anticipated?
It would be difficult, in our opinion, at this point, in order to actually spend the amount of money, and by that I mean the resources likely would not be there to spend the amount of resources.
The appropriation may be there, the resource, the cash.
Exactly. You're governed by not only the appropriation, but also the available resources.
For the commission, Board of New Business, we have our next meeting will be on April the 16th, 2013, obviously at 10 a.m., where Representative Poe, you might be interested, there will be an overview and review of contract administration of the 2014 group insurance program, something that caused an awful lot of interest for you and all the other members in the last couple of years. With no further business,
I'm
the meeting stands adjourned.